Today's episode is brought to you by Proven Recruiting. As an agency, Proven has helped thousands of technology professionals find new opportunities at exciting companies across the United States. They focus on the quality over quantity approach in terms of building lasting relationships with both their candidates and clients. Today's episode is also brought to you by Golden Squirrel. Ensure the salary and benefits you're looking for in your next role match before your next interview. Create a free profile today at goldensquirrel.io to get access to members-only employer data, as well as to unlock the opportunity for companies to apply to you. On today's episode, we talk with Nasrul Islam, founder and CEO at Cloud AI. We talk about how this company is going to help automate and identify issues in the cloud, which will save your team dozens of hours of troubleshooting and guessing, as well as some of his experience in getting dozens of software patents written based on some of his previous work. I hope you enjoy today's episode. Welcome to another episode of Chasing Squirrels. On today's episode, we have Nasrul Islam, and he is the founder and CEO of Cloud AI. How are you doing today, Nasrul?
Nice. Great to be here. Thank you.
Good to have you. And we also have co-host Kelly Feast. Hey, Kelly.
Hey there. Hi.
First off, I like the clever name because it's not AI as in the letters AI. It's A and then the word I as in you see with your eye. So I kind of like that.
That's actually intentional. So we are in the process of building an AI-driven observability platform. So the idea is the customers would send us all their data and we would be the eyes and ears for kind of looking out for all their data and kind of making sure that when bad things happens, we are the first one to notify them. So that's why we use the I in the name.
I like it. So when you say the customers send you all of your data, what data? Can you give me an example of like a customer use case?
Yeah. So let's say our target customer segment is really startups or enterprises who run cloud native applications on public cloud. So public cloud meaning AWS, GCP, or Azure.
Okay.
So at a given point, some of these startups or enterprises would have a few hundred to a few thousand containers running. And these containers or applications being changed on a regular basis, like almost every day, people are making some changes. So because of the rapid change, sometimes we make mistakes. So imagine you have a few thousand containers running and now all of a sudden something is not working. So it becomes very hard to find out why something is not working. There's way too much data that are coming from these applications. So it becomes very, very hard to kind of identify the root cause and then kind of recover from the downtime. According to IDC, 1 hour of downtime is worth $25,000. So it's also very expensive on an average to be down from these outages. So what we are focusing on is building an AI response to all of this and kind of reimagine incident management using AI, machine learning and deep learning models. So instead of relying on humans to kind of do correlations, we send all these logs, metrics, traces to machine learning and deep learning model, and then try to find incidents as soon as they happen, and then also find contextual information so that recovery from this incident becomes much easier and faster.
So is the main use case of that not you're monitoring when it goes down as much as when it does go down, they're able to find the source of the problem faster? Is that correct?
Correct, yeah. And also imagine you are building an autonomous cloud control panel where mm-hmm. you are not assuming that there is a human on the outside always. So, instead of relying on humans, to kind of send them all sorts of alerts and, pretty charts, what we try to do is interpret the data so that we can make information much more contextualized so that when a human looks at it, it's much more meaningful and actionable.
How did you initially run into this problem to try and solve it?
Yeah, so I was actually on the other side of this. So I worked in Oracle Cloud for some time, and then I worked in a startup that was behind the commercial version of Jenkins. And so we had customers who ran pretty large, let's say, Jenkins installation. And then when they had challenges, they would come to us for help. And then I remember like dealing with lots of escalations, and some of these were very frustrating because we didn't necessarily know right away what the issue was. So towards the end of my executive MBA at Michigan, when I was finishing up my degree, you know, a couple of us were thinking about, you know, wouldn't it be cool to start a new venture together? And then one of the idea was, what's in the fridge? Meaning, like, you usually cook your dinner, you know, based on what you have in the fridge. So we were like thinking about, okay, what do we know? What you can bring to the table so that you can build a great company? Then I, you know, talked about, you know, my background and experiences, and that led to this idea of building a company with AI to kind of solve these problems.
Gotcha. So then did you kind of build the prototype basically from there?
Yeah. So after we kind of conceived the, like we went through like 20, 30 ideas, and this was one of the idea that resonated. And then we spoke to, you know, a bunch of peers to validate whether this would be interesting. We did a bunch of customer, kind of potential future customer interviews to discover. And then we also talked to a few VCs to see, you know, how would they think about this idea. And then once those looked positive, then we went and started to kind of do the prototype.
Okay. Can you maybe rewind a little bit and take us through some of your engineering background, kind of where you started and what are some of the things you worked on in your career?
Yeah. So I spent about 8 years at Sun Microsystem. I was in the server-side Java team. So our focus was to kind of make Java a popular language, programming language with enterprise developers.
Well, I think it worked then. Mission accomplished.
Yeah. So Sun was an obviously amazing company. And we all loved Sun. And we were very focused on making Java popular. So we used open source. We reached out to, you know, developer community. And then at the end, we were almost reaching like 10 million developers every year through our open source activities and stuff like that. We also focused on building a commercial product from the open source contributions. And then we were reasonably successful. We also learned from the MySQL team in terms of how to build a funnel and then kind of convert that to monetization, those kind of things. So that was wonderful. And then after that, I spent a few years at Oracle. One of the great things I learned there was how to kind of make very business savvy decisions. So one of the things that I learned at Oracle was, you know, how to kind of look at technology from a business perspective. So that was wonderful. And in terms of like making progress, making, you know, large changes. So I was there when Oracle was transitioning from an on-prem company to a cloud company. So a lot of, you know, change management happened.
What was it about Oracle that helped you start to make better business decisions? Was it kind of their culture, or was it a manager you had, or was it a problem you were solving?
So mostly about, you know, the executives there, like some of the executives were extremely business savvy, and the way they made decisions made it very easy to kind of, you know, there was almost like a framework in terms of how you were funding, you know, certain projects. So let's say in our group, we would go up to the management chain, but the way management was behaving as if they were VCs, even though we were a big company. So they were acting like a VC, and then they would only fund efforts or projects when these projects were actually would be of kind of getting traction from a kind of a business perspective. So we would go to, you know, we'd go through some initial work, and then would present to the executives, and the executives would ask questions as if they are, you know, external VCs. And if we are not able to answer those important questions, then we would not be getting funded, then we would work on something else. So that kind of culture actually made it super clear that how we should think about something, you know, from a business perspective, not always, you know, from a technology perspective.
That's pretty cool. And then where did you guys go after Oracle?
After Oracle, I joined a startup called CloudBees. They were behind Jenkins. Their focus was building kind of a, obviously, you know, contributing to Jenkins, you know, community open source, and then also building a commercial product that we were selling to Fortune 500 companies. So I worked on the kind of the, both the Jenkins community and the commercial version of Jenkins.
So it was there that you got the idea for Cloud AI. That was the company you were referring to earlier.
Yeah. So my time at CloudBees was very helpful from the perspective that I kind of firsthand saw how a startup works, and you know what are the challenges and what are the you know positives and negatives of a startup. And then also I was there when we were. Fairly successful. We actually grew very rapidly from about 200 people company to more than 400 people company within a year and a half. We grew more than doubled. The growth and recruitment and kind of investing on strategic efforts and having that focus was very important things to learn during my time at that startup.
I'm curious, what was it about starting your own company? What was a lot harder than you anticipated it being?
I think the hardest thing was to kind of decide that you are going to do it full time and you are going to own that decision. For a while, you know, you would make, you know, one forward step and then you would question yourself and you take, you know, two step back and, you know, be in this limbo. So when I was speaking with my wife, she was very supportive. And then she said, you know, if you don't shut down your alternatives, you're never going to do this thing. So the first thing you should do is really commit yourself and then own that decision. When I feel liberated now that, you know, I actually was able to make that decision and stop, you know, kind of thinking about other alternatives. And I said, okay, this is what I'm going to do for, you know, next 1 or 2 years and make sure that, you know, this startup takes off. So when I made that decision, then everything became much easier because I started to shut down, you know, other options.
Sounds like you have a smart wife.
yeah, she's very supportive.
So, practically speaking, what does that mean? Shut down the alternatives? Were you working on other things, or you like had to go and walk in and like quit your job that day to really commit to it, or what did that look like practically speaking?
So, you know, practically that means you know you're not looking for another job, you're not you know thinking about doing something else, you are committing that you are not going to have a salary because at the beginning of the startup, you know, you don't have a salary. So you are committing to that lifestyle that, yes, we'll survive on my wife's salary for a year or two. So that's a pretty significant hard decision. And then once you do that, then while it's tough, but it also kind of gives you that focus, which is pretty important, I think.
I love hearing, by the way, that the hardest decision was just doing it. It's like, I knew I could do it. I was ready to do it, but just like kind of drawing that line in the sand and saying like, it's going to happen. I bet you a lot of entrepreneurs struggle with that interest, that desire. And then, like you said, really pulling the trigger. So it's great that you kind of took that leap of faith per se, or that trust in yourself. Cause obviously you knew you could do it, right? It wasn't like,
yeah. Yeah,
the belief, it was just like the commitment maybe.
Yeah. So obviously we, you know, I worked, you know, 20 plus years in other companies and built you know, a lot of products. So I knew I could do the product building part, But the jumping in and kind of doing it for real on your own obviously requires courage. And when you finally are able to make that decision and also own it, meaning it's no longer that, you know, I'm doing it quietly, you know, I'm publicly doing it, then you no longer feel like you are an imposter. You know, you feel like,
it's the safety net, like really saying, okay, it's okay, we're gonna get rid of it. So I'm excited to hear that you took the leap of faith, and now you have a team of 7 or 8. So obviously things are becoming a reality. Can you tell us what the team looks like today, just overall, whether it's engineering or product or however it's laid out?
Yeah, so we are currently building our MVP. The team is mostly engineering at this point. We are a combination of a few people in Bay Area, California, and the rest of the folks we hired are remote. So at the beginning of the journey, we thought about what kind of company we wanted to build. And then one of the things that we wanted to do was a kind of a remote first and talent first company, because our focus is really AI. And when you kind of evaluated the options of kind of being, you know, on a geographic specific location with an office in person kind of thing. So this is even before the pandemic. One of the challenges was, well, do we really know we're going to get, you know, the right talent in that location? And what if we don't? So I thought if we can have the rest of the world as my potential talent pool for AI, then, you know, the options are much more than focusing on a specific location. So after some due diligence, we decided to kind of focus on going remote first. So some of the employees we right now hired are in remote locations and not.
Yeah, but I love that you're bringing kind of the reality of your product to life also. It's like, if AI isn't going to be location bound, let's not have us be the same. So it looks like you have a principal engineer, you've got a machine learning engineer, a couple machine learning engineers, a couple software, a DevOps person. So you've infrastructure. Is that kind of a decent representation of how it's laid out so far?
Yeah, so we are building a SaaS solution that's AI driven. So right now our work requires primarily two kind of expertise. You know, one set of expertise are people who are AI engineers, you know, who can write machine learning or deep learning models. So these folks are usually very good at math and, you know, good at writing the, you know, complicated algorithms and Python mostly. And then we have also another set of experts who are good at distributed programming, you know, writing applications on cloud as a SaaS, you know, multi-tenant applications. So we recruited those kind of experts in our team at the moment. And then our plan is to finish up our MVP by fall, and then go fundraising mode during fall. And then once we fundraise, then we start to hire other functions.
Okay.
One good thing I'll say about the current company is we are going to a conference end of this month in 29th and 30th called Startup Grind by the organizer, who were recognized as one of the top 24 startup in that conference. And there are like 13 countries representing there.
Wow.
We're very excited with the recognition, and we're looking forward to the conference there.
Yeah, and you're able to kind of put yourself out there and do a sort of like roadshow or sort of promotion of what you guys have going on. That's really exciting. I'm curious, that conference you just mentioned, is it a mix of investors and engineers and business people? Like, what's kind of the audience from what you understand?
Yeah, so the audience, there are about 3,500 people that plan to be there. So it's a mix of people, investors who are looking to invest in startups, and then a lot of startups And then I guess engineers in general wants to.
Well, that's great. I'll have to look out for that. I maybe I need to be there. It sounds like a really interesting space where a lot of really smart people are going to be. So circling back to your current team and some of the technology you mentioned, will you just run through the tech stack? I know they're buzzwords to me, but some of the front end technologies, the back end, the database. I know you mentioned the different public clouds, just to give somebody listening an idea of if they might fit in.
Yeah, absolutely. So our tech stack currently looks like we are building our MVP on AWS. And after we are done with AWS, we plan to support the other main cloud providers. We use Node.js and React. And we use a whole bunch of AWS services at the moment because our main focus is really differentiating with AI. Our AI modules are mostly written in Python. We use Python.
I saw Python and R listed, but sounds like primarily Python. And then I saw Go, you know, some Java. Are you pretty agnostic in that way, or maybe you're really trying to focus on Node?
So we are focusing on the kind of the cloud native stack. One of our focus is really Kubernetes, which is widely used at this point. So if you are dealing with Kubernetes, then knowing Go is useful. So from that perspective, Go. And then my background is Java. So obviously,
there is some. Very cool. Well, I think that's the right tech stack. I know that a lot of people are attracted to some of those Java and JavaScript frameworks. So the moving pieces there, I think, will catch the right candidate's attention. You said that you have some of your team in the Bay with you, some of them, I think, offshore, even in India. So truly, you would be open to seeing anyone in the United States, or maybe a small preference for the Bay just because it'll be close to you? Or what's your thought there?
We are truly remote first. Anyway, we are looking for talent. Talent is the first thing we
look for. Okay, very cool. Well, I definitely want to share this information with our network. We're excited to get the buzz out there. Is there anything else you'd want to share about the company, or just something that stands out, your leadership style, anything that a new engineer would benefit from knowing?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, the most unique thing about our company is really the kind of work we do, and also the kind of talent and culture we have. So think of us as a company who's not a knowing company. We are more of a learning company. So as a leader, my job is to make sure that everybody in the company feels safe to learn, try different things. And, you know, when it doesn't work out, we learn from it and, you know, move on quickly. So that's important. We are very purpose-driven. So our purpose is really to empower all the support engineers, you know, who are, you know, going through this dreadful experience of dealing with a downtime and, you know, getting stressed out. So we want to empower them. We want to give them superpowers so that they can recover from these issues quickly and then move on to more differentiated, technology building. And then we focus on being very authentic in our experience. So, to avoid kind of the dysfunctions, as you can imagine in a team. One of the things I do is, you know, even though we are a startup, we are busy, you know, I maintain one-on-ones with everybody on a regular basis. We talk about, personal development, career goals, you know, their kind of internal purpose, you know, finding their internal purpose. And then also, you know, sometimes I share, you know, very personal stories to kind of make a connection. You know, the focus is really to build trust with each other and make sure that we are authentic, we are, you know, vulnerable, and, you know, we are making, you know, real connections. So if it's real, then hopefully it's possible. And through that, you know, relationship, we invest in each other's success, and that kind of makes it a very unique experience in terms of working at the company.
I think what you just touched on is the number one reason why somebody gets excited about a company is those foundational beliefs and some of those practices that you're able to put in place when you're starting a company versus when you go to Oracle. Maybe their culture is great, but already is what it is. It sounds like you're getting to set the pace. So really, really exciting to hear that.
Yeah.
One thing that I think is interesting too is I noticed that you either originated or own some patents. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. So during my years when I was engineer at Sun Microsystem and also at Oracle, we did a bunch of projects. And one of the things that we would do at the end of a project is kind of talk to the patent lawyers to see if there was anything interesting to patent. And then what ended up happening is what I noticed is some of our projects had a lot of patentable ideas. So I remember like one of the project I was kind of engineering manager leading that project and ended up filing like almost like 70 plus patents from that project itself. So, yeah, I've been very lucky to be working on some of the coolest engineering, you know, projects in these companies and end up filing for, I think, 47 patents. And 20 plus of these patents are already approved.
Just a few. Just 20 plus. That's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel, you know, a lot of gratitude for having this opportunity to work on this kind of, you know, engineering projects.
What's it like filing for a patent? Is it super tedious?
Unfortunately, yes. But most of the tedious work was actually taken care of by the patent lawyers. So the way it worked out was, the lawyers I worked with, they were really good. So what we used to do is we used to meet with them and kind of explain our projects and what we did, share our technical details. And they were very good in terms of catching, you know, on, you know, what was being built. And then we would meet, you know, for a few hours, go over details, and then they would come up with which they think are patentable. And then obviously they would write for each pattern, like, you know, I don't know, 60 to 100 page document that you would have to review. So that was the hardest part.
Gotcha.
Review all of that language. And then once that's done, then they would file for you on your behalf.
That's awesome. Is there anything else that we didn't cover that you want to share about cloud AI?
If you want to think about one thing about cloud AI, think about the future when you could deploy a application to cloud and the cloud is autonomous and that control plane is taking care of your applications without you needing to support it. That's sort of the vision we have, and we are obviously very early in the stage, but hopefully we'll get there one day.
That's awesome. Well, I just want to thank you for coming on the episode today, Nazrul. So we appreciate having you.
Yeah, absolutely. Great to meet both of you. Thank you so much.
Thanks again for listening to today's episode. Today's episode was brought to you by Proven Recruiting. As an agency, Proven has helped thousands of technology professionals find new opportunities at exciting companies across the United States. They focus on the quality over quantity approach in terms of building lasting relationships with both their candidates and clients. Thanks again for listening. Don't forget to subscribe.